only works for one.
Members, we will call the meeting to order. Today is Monday, April 15th, 2013. I wanted to make mention, in case everybody can't tell, Senator Dibble is not here today, and as many people know, he is in Boston, and he's fine. So I will be chairing today, and we do want to send our thoughts and prayers to everybody in Boston in light of the tragic events that are happening there. Moving on with today's business, because it is a full day, as you can see from your agenda, we have 13 bonding bills. We have spoken with all of the authors in advance and ask that we limit testimony to 10 minutes on each of these bills for the presentation. We do have a timer to keep us on track, and we'll let you know when you have 2 minutes remaining. We will not be taking any votes on these bills today. They will all be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bonding bill. And as Senator Dibble mentioned before, the committee will likely be forwarding a list of bonding proposals to the Finance and Capital Investment Committees for consideration. And with that, we will get started with Senate File 150 and Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Welcome,
I have
Senator
before
Brown.
Us today, thank you, Senate File 150. It is a bonding appropriation for the Malone Island Bridge for the City of Isle. Members, you'll see in your packets that the bridge, not only the bridge, but the sewage and water line that is attached to the bridge is rapidly deteriorating. This bridge goes over a portion of Lake Mille Lacs, connecting the 200 residents to the Malone Island. And as you can see, over the past few years, the water line and the sewage line has dropped by 12 inches. It's connected to the bridge. The supports are deteriorating. The bridge is deteriorating. It's a 50-year-old wooden bridge. I was standing out there with the mayor of Isle a while back. It literally shakes when the school bus or traffic goes over the bridge. We stood on the bridge for him to make the point of how rapidly this bridge is deteriorating. The biggest area of concern is what's going to happen to the ecosystem of Lake Mille Lacs when the sewage line breaks and starts pumping tons of raw sewage directly into Mille Lacs Lake. It's a spawning area for walleye. It's going to be devastating to the ecosystem of Lake Mille Lacs when this sewage line breaks. So we're here asking for an appropriation of $800,000 to get this problem fixed before it becomes even more serious. And here to testify today, I have Tim Corby, the city engineer of the City of Isle, and Councilwoman Linda Dahlin from the City of Isle.
Thank you, Senator Brown and Madam Chair, committee members.
Mr. Corby.
My name is Tim Corby, and I am the city engineer for the City of Isle. I'm also the incoming president for EDOM, which is the Economic Development Association of Minnesota. And first, I'd like to thank you on behalf of our 780 residents of Isle and the City Council, located on beautiful yet frozen Lake Mille Lacs, for allowing us to present our request for this very serious need before your committee today. As one of the largest cities located on Lake Mille Lacs, we cherish this precious resource. Treat it like it's one of our own. And we want to maintain it for generations to come, and that's really why we're here today. Malone Island Bridge. So what does a wooden, old, dilapidated, worn-out bridge have to do with the health and well-being of Lake Mille Lacs and the fish that inhabit this lake every day? We're here to ask the state of Minnesota to assist the City of Isle, Lake Mille Lacs, its fishery, and the state tourism economy with replacing the Malone Island Bridge, the sewer main, the water main, the gas main also that's attached to this bridge. So a little bit of history first. Over 25% of our residents of Isle reside actually on the island, Malone Island, which is located on Lake Mille Lacs. It's one of the only islands that is inhabited on Lake Mille Lacs. About 50 years ago, a wooden bridge was constructed to allow the residents that live on the island to drive their cars freely from Malone Island to the mainland. About 40 years ago then, the city essentially strapped a sewer line, water line, and then ultimately a gas main to this wooden bridge. Because 40 years ago, as an engineer, that was the only way to really construct these infrastructures. Of course, today we have the ability now to bore these lines under the stream that enters Lake Mille Lacs. So during a recent engineering analysis, similar to the one that was done for 35W, It was determined that this 50-year-old wooden bridge is in desperate need of replacement. As the senator stated, actually when you drive over it, it actually shakes. And unfortunately, this shaking and this movement has actually caused the support that holds the sewer, water, and gas line to actually fail now. And so imagine this gas line now is pointed towards the Lake Mille Lacs. It's settled about 12 inches towards the lacs, and again is in need of repair. More critical, during the bridge inspection, it was determined that this utility support was failed. To me, this is a real, as I call it, ticking time bomb from an engineering and environmental standpoint, and would have a catastrophic permanent damage to Lake Mille Lacs and its fisheries should this utility support have total failure. If the support or bridge were to fail, this would allow hundreds of thousands of gallons of sewage and gas to be discharged directly into Lake Mille Lacs, in particular to this precious spawning grounds. Where this bridge is located is in a backwater on Lake Mille Lacs, but a precious spawning ground where a lot of walleyes and other fish spawn every year. I think you can now see why we're here asking you for your help today. Again, this is a precious fishery. This is precious for the fishing, for the tourism, for the city, and also the state of Minnesota. As incoming president for EDAM, I believe it would have a devastating impact on our tourism and fishing economy should this occur, should the bridge fail, should the sewer and water lines fail and fall into Lake Mille Lacs, similar to the BP incident a couple years ago in the Gulf of Mexico. So our ask today is that the state seriously consider assisting the city of Isle with replacing the Malone Island Bridge sewer, water, and gas line before it's too late. The city has been proactive. They have already spent some of their dollars addressing this issue. We've completed the construction drawings, the plans and specifications already. We're ready to go to construction yet this summer. Again, not doing this project this summer could have a grave impact on the lake's population, potentially impacting what I consider Minnesota's crown jewel, Lake Mille Lacs. The city is proposing to complete this project yet this year. Again, our cost estimate is a total project is $1.1 million. Again, we've come up with $300,000, so the city is kicking in some money for this project. So the question today is it worth the state of Minnesota saving the health and well-being of Lake Mille Lacs, its fishery and environment from this ticking time bomb? We, obviously, as a city, think the answer is yes. If Lake Mille Lacs has a state impact on our economy and the overall health and well-being of our state, that we believe it's worth the state helping out our small yet important community with our serious issue today. So the City of Isle and I would like to thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee members very much for your serious consideration of this request. I'm going to pass it over to Councilmember Dahlin right now for some final words.
Thank you,
Mr.
Tim.
Corby. Ms. Dahlin.
Go ahead. Madam Chairman.
Yes.
I don't own a home on Malone Island Bridge, so I'm not personally impacted, but I know a lot of people that do live there. It is 20 to 25% of our population. Tim mentioned that our population is in the neighborhood of 780. That balloons to thousands upon thousands of people every single weekend. The economy of Isle is largely dependent upon tourism, and primarily from opener in May until the fall, although we do have ice fishing as well. And so because we have most of our tourism is ma-pa resorts, they're family-owned, and so it would devastate the local economy. And I discovered this area. I think it's really relevant to the entire state of Minnesota, not just our little area, because Mille Lacs literally is about an hour and 20-minute drive from the north rim of the Twin City area. And as a result, a lot of people can just come up and back for the day rather than, say, Rainy Lake or the others in North BWCA, which are great places, but you have a half a day commitment of travel time. So we do have a lot of people, which is how I discovered it. My son and I started hunting in the Mille Lacs area and discovered Isle, and I wound up moving there because I love the town. But it really does impact a lot of people that come to visit, not only just the people that are there, and it would really devastate our economy. I think that's all I have to say today.
Thank you, Ms. Dahlin.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Peterson?
Madam Chair and Senator Brown, I just wanted to confirm, oftentimes when this committee and others are asked to make recommendations, my belief is that we have to prioritize projects that have the ability to start right away. Could you just repeat? I think I heard what you said, but say, for example, this capital investment passes at the end of this session, the third week of May, how soon would you start construction?
We could go to bidding in 30 days and start construction within 60 days.
Thank you.
Senator Brown?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I just want to reiterate, commitment of $800,000 from the state is a bargain price compared to what it would cost the state if that sewage line breaks and starts dumping into the lake. It would cost millions of dollars. So I do appreciate your consideration for this. I hope that you will refer it on to the Capital Investment Committee. And as Senator Peterson asked, it is ready to go. It's a shovel-ready project, so we appreciate your consideration.
Thank you, Senator Brown. And if I can acknowledge very quickly that we do have a quorum present. And thank you for keeping your presentation under 10 minutes. Members, are there any additional comments or questions? Then the chair lays over Senate File 150 for possible inclusion in a future bonding bill.
Thank you, Madam
Chair.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
We're going to skip around a little bit as promised. Senator Kiffmeyer, if you would like to join us next. With Senate File 426 and 1201.
Well, Madam Chair.
Ready,
Madam Chair and committee members, I would like to take Senate File 1201 first.
Okay.
This is the Rogers I-94 additional lanes bond issue and appropriation. And Madam Chair, today the bill that I have here is for from Rogers stretch of I-94 to St. Michael. I do have some testifiers here with me today from the city of St. Michael and from the area that can testify to the particulars. And I just want to mention that on this particular bill, I also have Senators Bonhoff and Hoffman as co-authors with Senator Peterson and Senator Anderson, and also Representative Dorholt is the author in the House. I thought it would be of interest to you. And so I would like to go ahead and start out with Steve Bott, the City Administrator of St. Michael, to start off the presentation.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer and Madam Chair. I appreciate you having us here today. My name is Steve Bott. I am the City Administrator and also City Engineer for the City of St. Michael, and also the Chair of the I-94 Coalition, which, if you look at our now tipping slide, represents cities all the way from the Plymouth-Maple Grove area all the way up through St. Cloud and into both the tourism area and booming parts of North Dakota that our local Minnesota businesses are able to take advantage of the things that are going on there. 94, as it sits along this corridor, is one of the most congested corridors outside of the metro area. Anybody who's probably gone there through to the cabin or come back or just on a daily commute has ran into this. The interregional corridor in the state is basically all the lines, as probably most of you know, the trunk system that brings all our people throughout the state and also the country, in addition to the business needs and the freight that comes there. This corridor from St. Michael to 23, a lot of people think of the area in Maple Grove as being even more congested, is 40% of the congestion on the interregional corridor in Minnesota, yet it's only actually 1.6% of the system length. So even without the over 2 million visitors annually that go up north for recreation, it's already very overcrowded. We did hand out a brochure that kind of highlights our needs. That's highlighted on the first page. The second page kind of shows you that we do have bipartisan support, both as Senator Kiffmeyer mentioned, both in the House and the Senate here, as well as federally. They recognize the interstate system as their new bill, MAP 21, came out, puts the highest priority on the interstate. as well as to highlight areas like safety, mobility, and economic development, in addition to the preservation mode that MnDOT's currently in. Along that line, this segment is not planned for any improvements by MnDOT over the next 20 years as they've gone into a preservation mode, and that's where we really feel there's some real needs in our corridor where other corridors and other areas have been taken care of in the past. It really highlights by that 40% over that 1.6% need that's exacerbated in this corridor. I'd also have you look at the third page, which is piques a lot of people's interest as far as it's our state inroads throughout the entire state as things come through on the USDOT freight maps. The highlighted in red you can see really is there's only one corridor, and that's really ours that takes both routes from throughout the international area throughout the U.S. through here. So safety, one more point on that is that this area that this bill highlights has over twice the both the amount of accidents as well as the severity of accidents in Minnesota, more than twice the state rate. The head of the North Memorial Ambulance Service, in fact, is quoted as saying they can't even get to an accident in this area. They pretty much have to helicopter everything in. So with that, I will turn it over to Rhonda Bach, the head of our I-94 chamber, to highlight some of the business concerns for the many businesses she represents.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for your time today. My name is Rhonda Bach, president of the I-94 West Chamber of Commerce, representing 10 communities, 10 cities out that line, I-94 heading west, northwest of Maple Grove and beyond. As Steve stated, central Minnesota has seen a steady increase in freight, commuter, and vacationer traffic with very little changes in the system in that region. So we ask that you do consider Senate File 426 and 1201 as a way to help the situation out there. As Steve touched on, there's a safety concern with our emergency vehicles being able to access accidents along the freeway. We're a national artery for freight, and as Steve also mentioned, with Map 21, MnDOT has been asked to address freight bottlenecks, and this is certainly, I think, one of the top ones in the state of Minnesota. So again, on behalf of our communities, residents, I would ask that you support the Senate files. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bach.
Madam Chair, also with me today, Nadine Schoen. She is a city council member with the City of St. Michael, just to say a few words as well of support.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I really want you to consider this. As a small business owner myself, I see this main artery as being such very important too. When we went to Washington, it really got their attention, because right now we're all looking for ways to create jobs, keep industrial here. This is one of those ways. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so with that, we appreciate your support. I just want to add to it as well. If you take a look at the map that we see there, Interstate 94 is in a sandwich. You've got the railroads, you've got the river, and there is only one key road. It takes you up to Camp Ripley. These are your vacationers, as Senator Bonoff said, in K-12 education. She does fine getting through the Twin Cities, but she hits this area and she comes to a screech and halt. And time again, that's what you hear people. But it's also safety. It's also our military support. It's transportation. It's freight. It's a key artery, but it's also become a choke point. And that's a real danger to us, and it's just plain getting worse. So we see this as a critical time. We understand the situation with the Trunk Highway Funds, and that's why we're seeking support from the bonding bill as well. So, Madam Chair, with that, I appreciate and ask for your support of House Senate File 1201.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer. Members, any questions? All right, then. Then the chair lays over Senate File 1201 for possible inclusion in a future bill.
Okay. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And we're going to bring up, because this stretch of Interstate 94 starts in this Rogers area, but the next bill, Senate File 426, is the continuing section after St. Michael on the way up to Monticello. We know that as soon as we take care of the first part of the bottleneck, which is also in Hennepin County, in Senate File 1201, that beginning part of it is a part that is in Hennepin County, but the next part is in Wright County and goes on up to Monticello. And so, Madam Chair, I have here today with me a county commissioner, mayor as well. As well to testify in support. And again, we're not going to repeat anything that we said on the first stretch of the highway to just be concise and to save our time, but to continue from there in regards to the scope of this and continue up to Monticello. And did Mayor? Mayor will introduce himself and address Senate File 426.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Kirchmeier. My name is Mayor Clint Herbst from Monticello, and I won't repeat. They basically stole all my thunder because we're all running into the same issues all the way up 94. As an elected official and as you as elected officials, part of our duty is to work on the quality of life, and 94 is a huge deterrent for quality of life in our area all the way up that from Rogers basically up to St. Cloud. So we ask you to take a good look at this, understand that any improvements that we make to 94 aid on the congestion on Highway 10, aid on the congestion on Highway 55. More often than not, I end up skirting over to Highway 55 just to get away from 94, which that should be the major artery that pushes this traffic through our commerce and everything like that. We did put together a great list of notes you guys probably want to take home, maybe put it on your refrigerator, read it every day. But those are some of our concerns, and as you'll see, there we have the same concerns all the way up 94 after you get past Rogers, because it is basically a parking lot, something as simple as a flat tire, traffic violation stops the traffic, and it stops it for a long ways. It really does, and so if you could take a good hard look at this, we very much would appreciate it.
Thank you, Mayor.
And Madam Chair, in addition, we have a county commissioner here today, Mr. Potter.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer. Madam Chair and committee, thank you for listening to me today. My name is Michael Potter. I'm a commissioner with Wright County, and we are blessed with actually having three of our districts with I-94 running through it. One of the key components, what everybody else has spoken already, the main bottleneck that we experience there is that Crow River Bridge. That needs to be widened to make it more functional and safe. We had a serious issue, 241 eastbound. I can't go from me to you, Madam Chair, before I'm at the bridge. And there's no way you're going to accelerate to 70 miles an hour and merge. It's the big choke point of the whole process. The three lanes going all the way up, if you've heard, all the way up to St. Cloud Corridor and that, it's real imperative for commerce of Commodore, corridors of commerce and everything else. And all I can add to that is that Crow River Bridge is really important to get that done now. Get that. That is where all my constituents are complaining that we come to a screeching halt right there all the time. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
And Madam Chair, just to add to that as well, if you take a look at Monticello as well on the map, you will see that State Highway 25 cuts through from Highway 10, crosses over 94 and goes down to 55. Highway 55 is a two-lane road. When you have people that are taking two-lane roads, county roads, local streets and residences because they are faster than the interstate, you have a problem. So not only is the congestion happening on I-94, but it's having a rebound effect all throughout the area. And again, these are key links for safety, for freight, for commerce, for people who are in the Twin Cities who would like to get out for a little up north experience. They're stuck. They're spending time, gas money, air pollution. There are things that are and also the offshoots in regards to the subsequent county and state highways as well. So this has become critical and essential. And so, Madam Chair, we're just here before you today just asking that you would make a recommendation in the letter to the bonding bill project to include this section of Interstate 94 all the way from Rogers up to Monticello, and we'd appreciate your support. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer. Members, any questions or comments? Seeing none, with that, the chair lays over Senate File 426 for possible inclusion in a future bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Senator Johnson? With Senate File 1038.
Madam Chair, I do have a handout if I can get one of the pages.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. We'll get that taken care of.
I better keep one.
And welcome to the Transportation Committee.
Thank you. Pleased to be here. I'm here on behalf of the National Sports Center in Blaine. With me is Paul Erickson, our Executive Director. And the reason we're here is because there are two streets, highways, if you want to say, that are very much in need of repair that run next to the National Sports Center. And so I will let Mr. Erickson tell you why we are asking for your support for this great facility. I'm very proud to be representing the area that holds the National Sports Center and all of the activities that go on there, statewide, nationwide, worldwide, actually. A great economic support for our state. So with that, I'll let Mr. Erickson speak.
Mr. Erickson.
And for the record, it's Paul Erickson, Executive Director of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. First of all, I'd like to just recognize Senator Senjum, who serves on our board and is very familiar with the National Sports Center. Madam Chair, I think it'd be helpful just very briefly. I know you're in a very tight schedule, but the National Sports Center in Blaine is a state facility. It has 4 million annual visitors. That's more than the Metrodome, XL, or Target Center. It is our state's most visited sports facility. And the project for today is very simple and straightforward, is that the western border of the National Sports Center, on the other side are private businesses. The city would like to improve Davenport Street, and their typical way of doing it is to assess property owners, and the city is unable to assess the state agency, and also the state agency, the Amateur Sports Commission, does not have an appropriation to take care of this. So $170,000 is needed to take care of the state's share of that road. So that's very simple and straightforward. The second one is the road that intersects the north and south campuses of the National Sports Center, which is over 600 acres large, is 105th Avenue, and it's Anoka County Road 87. And a study is needed to plan for the future upgrade of that road, and so we're requesting a $42,000 share, of which the plan is for the city, the county, and MnDOT. We would represent the state's share here. So the combination of $170,000 and $42,000, and it's just real basic, is that the city has limited resources to improve the connecting roads, and they're unable to assess state property. So this represents the fair share for the state of Minnesota to get this road improved. And a couple of things are very much safety-minded, because there's some turn lanes, which will relieve some traffic. And also, the one thing I know this is committee is very interested in, Madam Chair, is that, is it ready to go? And yes, the city wanted to build this project 2 years ago, but when they were unable to assess the state property, they had to put it on hold. So the engineering drawings, this project could be let to bid as soon as the snow melts, and we would be building this summer. So with that, I appreciate your consideration, Madam Chair.
And for all involved, we'll hope the snow melts soon.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. Senator Johnson?
That completes our presentation. If there are any questions, myself or Mr. Erickson would be happy to answer them.
Members, any questions? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as a commission member who's gotten to know this facility pretty well, I will tell you there's a lot of traffic out there, and I can understand fully the needs for some upgrades here. So hopefully we can support this.
Thank you, Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair, I'd like to recognize the chair of the Amateur Sports Commission, Dwayne Ahrens, who's in the back row there, being shy, which is not typical of him.
Welcome. Thank you all for coming and being here today and sharing this proposal. And the chair lays over Senate File 1038 for possible inclusion in a future bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Next, Senator Limmer with Senate File 1220, please. Welcome, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have guests from the city of Dayton today regarding the bill that they have, Senate File 1220. And just as a little bit of introduction before I hand it off to the mayor and his assistant, I wanted to let you know that Highway 94, in between Maple Grove and Rogers, there's a tiny little corner, the southwest corner of the city of Dayton, that gets clipped by Highway 94. And it gives them a perfect access for their city to be on the freeway. Quite often, traffic is stopped along Highway 94 as you go out of town, especially on a Friday afternoon when you're trying to get up north during the summer months. Highway 94 becomes a literal parking lot for about 4 hours every Friday, and oftentimes on rush hour traffic, especially in inclement weather or whether there's any precipitation at all, whether it's snow or a little mist on the road, that traffic is going to come to a stop. There's a number of reasons why to put an interchange right at that corner of that southwest corner of Dayton, and that is not only to give the city of Dayton much-needed access off 94, it's also critical for the congestion that oftentimes comes up. This area that this site is located at is 6 miles away from Rogers and 6 miles away from Maple Grove. It's right in the middle. And if you've ever been stuck in traffic that kind of represents kind of a big tube because you can't make a U-turn on the freeway, there's cable dividers going down the middle, you are literally stuck there. Whether you have an emergency or not, you cannot get on or off the freeway without severe endangerment of someone's life. I've got the mayor here. I want to make sure we move quickly. And I'd like to introduce Tim McNeil, the mayor of Dayton.
Thank you very much, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'd like my intern from the city of Dayton to also introduce himself.
I'm Rob Matthews.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I just wanted to, and again, thank you, Senator Limmer. You should have a handout in front of you, and I'm going to walk you through that relatively quickly. First of all, if you're not familiar with Senator Limmer's district, Dayton is just north of Maple Grove. It's in one of the scheduled to be one of the fastest areas to grow in the metro area. However, we do not currently have access from the freeway, which causes us a bit of a problem. Dayton, Rogers, Maple Grove, and Corcoran would all benefit from this particular interchange. This interchange has been in the works for over 10 years, and MnDOT, as well as all the other organizations that are stakeholders, have been involved in the planning for this and have signed off. We have letters of support from our congressional districts delegations, both Senate and congressional delegations. This is a jobs creator. Senate File 1220 asked for $22.8 million. That is the entire construction cost of the fully built out interchange. If we were to get a smaller amount, that would still allow us to move forward with this. and leverage other funding potentials, whether those are TED grants or local matches of other sorts. The one thing I do want to emphasize is this actually dovetails very closely with the bills or the legislation that your second and third testifiers talked about in terms of the lanes going from Maple Grove up to St. Cloud or Monticello. If this project were to go through by itself, we would be able to add lane miles for that segment of road, which represents a portion of what those two testimonies were referring to. This area is one of the most congested areas in the state. It represents, as I understand it, 1.6% of the lane miles, and yet 40% of the congestion. Dayton is, and all travelers along this route are actually paying what can be considered a congestion tax. I look at this as a funding this interchange and these additional lane miles as a tax decrease, because you are reducing the congestion tax that all the businesses basically are paying by having their products sit on the road moving 20 miles an hour or less, 4 hours a day, 8 hours a day sometimes on a weekend. In addition to jobs and congestion, this also is a safety issue. A hospital just was built in Maple Grove thanks to the efforts of the legislature and Senator Limmer in particular. That hospital is almost landlocked during the periods of congestion. It is almost impossible to get vehicles through the 94 lane miles that are there. This would help alleviate that. In addition, anybody who's injured in the Rogers, Dayton, Maple Grove area trying to get access onto 94 would have difficulty absent this this interchange. There are many other reasons to view this as an ongoing project. 13,000 jobs, the Met Council has estimated, are going to be created in this area with the addition of the interchange. It is right adjacent to a rail line, so we have the potential of both transit and freight transportation. And lastly, we have a golf course which just went into receivership less than a quarter mile away from where this interchange will be built. That represents a 80-plus acre campus, which could be turned into a corporate headquarters for a major corporation. The amount of areas that have an 80-acre area within a quarter mile of an interchange in the entire state is probably less than two. So we're really looking at the entire metro area. So we're really looking at a variety of reasons why this is actually an incredible economic opportunity. And again, the $22.8 million is not what we're asking for. That's the cost of the entire bill. But we really would need a neighborhood of $5 million or more to be able to move this forward. And in conclusion, I would also like to point out that the federal government has provided us $800,000 already to do the design, the location, and a bunch of the other work that's gone into this. So this is not a project that has started from scratch. We are actually at the end part of this process, the end part being the part where we need the cash. That's pretty much all I have. I don't know, Bob, do we have any more to add?
Thank you, Mayor. Members, any questions or comments regarding this bill? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm glad to see you here, Mayor. And we just talked about the rest of I-94. It's I-94 day, I think, here. And matter of fact, our folks decided they had to get on the road to try and get ahead of the worst of the rush hour traffic. So they apologize for not staying to enjoy your presentation as well. And without a doubt, you've got some good things prepared here and your good timeline and good work. I want to thank you for that. And I think Senator Peterson had asked the question of another group, and that is in regards to, are you ready to go if you get the money?
We have received $800,000 from the federal government that allowed us to get to a point where if we were to get the money, depending on how much money we were to get, obviously if you were to give us $22 million, we would be able to go right away. If we were to get a lesser amount, we are still in the process of applying for TED grants, and we're working with communities and business partners to get additional funding. It is our hope that once we have all our funding in line, we would be breaking ground in less than 12 months. All the design work in terms of location and interchange design has been done. The only thing that's left for us to do is land acquisition for the actual site and the actual final engineering of the project, both of which are contingent upon getting additional funding. Mm-hmm. We are as set to go as you can physically possibly be.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
For those of you who don't know where this exactly is, if you ever look at a traffic map on your local TV station in the early morning hours, we're in the far, it would be in the far upper left corner. It's the very first section of road that lights up red every morning as stalled traffic. It's got 120,000 cars a day that travel on this route. And this has been needed for a long time just to alleviate congestion, and it gives a benefit to a city to give them an access to the freeway.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, then, the chair lays over Senate File 1220 for possible inclusion in a future bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And next, Senator Hayden with Senate File 502, please. And Senator Higgins, welcome.
Good. Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Thank you for allowing us to have this opportunity to discuss this project today. I know it's probably been said, but our thoughts with the people in Boston, especially the chair of this committee, and we're glad that I know that a lot of us heard. I know I've heard personally that he's doing well, and our prayers with the folks that are there. With that being said, Madam Chair, members, I have today, you might know a familiar face to my right. She is the IGR co-chair of the Hennepin County Board, Commissioner Linda Higgins, and also have Captain Jim Baer from the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office. Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is a bonding request for $10.3 million to support a total project cost of $33.75 million for the Hennepin County Sheriff's 911 Regional Emergencies Communication Center. It should be noted that the legislator provided $4.7 million in 2011 bonding package towards this project. The additional $10.3 million request would represent a total state contribution of $15 million. To this $33.75 million project with regional and statewide importance. The project is ready to go. In fact, they've already broken ground. With that, I'll turn it over to Commissioner Higgins for a review of the project.
Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And since I grumped at everybody when I sat in those chairs, I'm going to have to pull my microphone forward, I'm sure. I am Linda Higgins, Hennepin County Commissioner. Thank you, Senator Hayden, for taking the lead on this project. The Hennepin County Board has this project among our top bonding requests this session. It's an important project to the county and the state to ensure ongoing reliable emergency communications. This facility has regional and statewide significance. That is why the legislature approved $4.7 million in the 2011 bonding bill for this project. We're here again this year asking for $10.3 million for a total state match of $15 million for a project cost, or toward a project cost of nearly $34 million. The county board has had this project in our capital improvement plan for nearly 10 years. It has been reviewed by and recommended by our citizen-led capital budget task force and included for construction funding starting a couple of months ago. Through this process, we have reduced the overall scope and the project cost, but we continue to ensure that we are building a facility that meets the needs of our citizens into the future. We have letters of support for this project from 35 cities across Hennepin County for this project. I believe you got a PowerPoint presentation in your packets and also a fact sheet from us at Hennepin County. I won't go through it page by page, but on page 3 you'll see a cost breakdown and you'll see more information about this. I thought what Hennepin County did was really smart in that we didn't have to go buy land for this project. We actually had land that we could make available that was on our, we're not supposed to call it the workhouse. What do we call it?
Adult correctional facility.
That. The adult correctional facility campus. So out in the far tip of the district that I get to represent in Plymouth is this campus, and that's where it's going to be included, right next to the adult correctional facility that we don't call the workhouse. And so at this point, I will introduce Captain Jim Bayer from the Sheriff's Office, and he will provide an overview of the need for this facility.
Thank you, Commissioner Higgins. Madam Chair, committee members, good afternoon. I'm Captain Jim Bayer from the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office. Give you a little background about our operation in Golden Valley right now. We run one of the largest consolidated dispatch centers in the upper Midwest. We dispatch for 36 different cities right now that are serviced by 20 fire departments and 24 police departments. If you call 911 from any of these communities, the phone is answered at the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office. We handle up between 600,000 and 700,000 calls every year. Currently, our building in Golden Valley is the backbone for the armor radio system for anybody who lives in Hennepin County, whether you live in Eden Prairie, Richfield, Minnetonka, or Bloomington, who have their own PSAPs. The radio system that works for them is provided through the dispatch center in our building, or the armor system in our building. That's part of the reason it's of regional importance, but it also that our part of the armor system actually feeds the radio system all the way to southwestern Minnesota. So people who live down in the southwest part of the state also get the operations of their radio system come through our building. And we are one of only six in the state. As part of the statewide system, Hennepin County hosts our other dispatch centers all the way to the southwest part of the state, but also includes the county of Ramsey in the metropolitan area. Give you a little context. Our current facility was built in 1948. It was before we had color television, so it kind of gives you the idea how old the building is. And I think Hennepin County and the Sheriff's Office has done a real good job of utilizing that building to its fullest potential. It's been added on to three times. We're pretty much landlocked now. We can't go make the building there any bigger because of the tower that we have. It's a guide wire tower, so we have run out of resources there. Our current building is inadequate not only for the size reason, but because of the cooling and heating issues we have. Even last summer, we had in 2011, we had a small fire in our UPS room, which is our uninterrupted power supply, should we lose power either by XL Energy or our generator. So that's always concerning to us that it has the proper equipment that's state-of-the-art. Ensuring future reliability of the statewide emergency communications network is critical to both Hennepin County and the state. And with that, I'd turn it back over to Commissioner Higgins for any closing comments.
Thank you for hearing us today, and we'll stand for any questions. And Madam Chair, if I can give a shout out to my very own state senator.
Senator Champion.
Thank you. I was just going to say it's so great to see Commissioner Higgins back here. And she represented our wonderful district for 16 years, and we are always so proud of her work there, and we are excited about the work that she's continuing to do on the board of the commissioners. And so I just wanted to say thank you for bringing this worthwhile legislation, Mr. Hayden, Senator Hayden, and thank you for having my senator here. She will always be my senator, even though she will always be my
Understood.
Senator. And Madam Chair, I'm always telling Senator Hayden how old I am, and the building that our 911 center is in currently is 2 years older than I am. So it's really, really old, and I'm glad that we're replacing it.
And no one here is doing anything. Well, thank you all, Senator Hayden. And with that,
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair, I've had occasion to tour this facility, as perhaps many others have. I don't know, but and certainly became convinced over the last couple of years that this is a worthy project. We put it in the bonding bill last year, I think it was $4 million or so. But I think it's important that we proceed on this, and this too. What really impresses me about this, we always, even in my own city, we talk about consolidating dispatch, and we get all the kickback about, well, how can all these cities, how could they all possibly be consolidated under one dispatch system? And I don't remember the number, maybe you quoted, I want to say 35 or 36 municipalities in Hennepin County, you know, pretty big place, all are able to work out of this single facility. And I think it's marvelous, and these are the kind of things we need to encourage.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Senator. If I could add one thing, we will be adding another city next year. The city of Golden Valley will also be joining our dispatch centers next year.
Thank you. And with that, the chair leaves over Senate File 502 for possible inclusion in a future bonding bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Next up, Senator Coonan. Senator, your pleasure, 1157 or 1110?
Madam Chair, I think I'll start with 1157, and then I do have a testifier here for Senate File 1110 also.
Whenever you're ready, Senator.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. Senate File 1157 appropriates $140 million in fiscal year 2014 from the bond proceeds account in the Trunk Highway Fund to the Commissioner of Transportation for construction of Trunk Highway 23. Now, Highway 23 from I-94 there at St. Cloud onto Wilmer, most of this stretch of Highway 23 is a four-lane divided highway, but there's two sections in this road, two seven-mile sections, which get referred to locally as gaps. There's two seven-mile gaps that are still two-lane road, and so that's what this money would be used for, is to bring those two sections up to be a four-lane divided highway. Now, I think you've got copies of letters of support from the Highway 23 Task Force in Wilmer, the Wilmer Area Development Corporation, Wilmer Lakes Area Chamber of Commerce, and the Candyohai County Board of Commissioners. And if you don't have those, I can get them for the committee. But all of those groups have letters of support. The long-range view of Highway 23 for the communities that live along Highway 23 would be that it would be a four-lane road from where up on the northeast part of the state where it intersects with I-35 all the way to southwest Minnesota where it connects with I-90, that all of that whole stretch be a four-lane divided highway. I'm sure those of you on the committee, being members of the committee, are very aware of where the four-lane roads are in Minnesota. But if you have, I'm sure you've seen these maps. And if you look at a map of Minnesota, there is a gap in west central Minnesota and southwest Minnesota where we just don't have four-lane roads. And 23 is apparently the road that looks like it will be four-lane at some point in the future. And what I'm bringing to you today is just a small part of that whole vision for the future. It's interesting that Minnesotans have better access to our neighboring cities, like, for example, Fargo or Sioux Falls, than they do to some of the communities along the two-lane stretch of Highway 23. The communities along Highway 23 wanted to bring this to the committee's attention, if you will, be another squeaky wheel in front of the committee. And I'm sure that the sound of squeaky wheels is deafening to the committee. I'm sure there's a lot of them. But it's our intention to make sure that the visibility of this project stays before you. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions or comments, members? Well, with that, the chair lays over Senate File 1157 for possible inclusion in a future bill. So next up, Senate File 1110.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. And with me today is Tiffany Collins, a transit director at Candyohai Area Transit. I'll give a short description of what the bill is about here and then turn testimony over to Ms. Collins. But what the bill does is appropriate $550 from the bond proceeds fund to the Commissioner of Transportation, and the money would be used for a grant to Kandua High County Area Transit for a building of an additional bus storage garage in Wilmer, and this could be used for up to 80% of the non-federal share of the cost. But with me here today is Ms. Collins, Transit Director of Kandua High Area Transit.
Welcome, Ms. Collins.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and the members of the committee. Kandua High Area Transit is a joint powers board between the City of Wilmer and Kandua High County, and we've been doing business as a public transit provider for the last 14 years. Our current facility was built in 2002, and it was meant to hold about 12 small vehicles. And at that time, we never dreamt that we would need larger facility. But over the years, we've tried some things and risked a few things by such as actually internalizing our maintenance facility. We actually use one of those bays currently now as a maintenance facility. We've been able to become more efficient housing that inside. We've also moved from the smaller vehicles to three larger vehicles, which obviously take up more space. And so we've learned that those are more efficient in the morning and the afternoon on our routes that are more higher volume. And so we're needing more space in that area. This particular project is to help us become or give us more space for some of the vehicles that are sitting outside each day and give us some more efficiency that way. We are also looking at going together and possibly doing some services with the Renville counties, possibly working more together with Meeker County and also Swift County and some of those transit facilities out there and doing some more of the maintenance and things like that in one regional location. As you all know, Wilmer is a medical hub for a lot of folks in the rural area. There's a lot of the dialysis and cancer treatments and things like that. And those are the main folks that use the public transportation to get to and from. And so we are a corridor of three major highway systems, Highway 12, Highway 23, and also Highway 71. And so there's a lot of folks that live within those areas that need to get into and from into Wilmer for those services. So we are growing, and we're seeing that the need for additional storage space, and that's why the bill is in front of you today. Welcome any questions.
Thank you. Any questions, members? Senator Coonan, any final comments?
No, thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, for hearing these bills today. Appreciate that.
Thank you. And with that, the Chair lays over Senate File 1110 for possible inclusion in a future bonding bill. Thank you. Next, Senator Ortman. With Senate File 866.
Madam Chair and members, thank you for having us before the Senate Transportation Committee. I'm proud to be here with folks from the City of Chaska and Carver County to present to you an improvement that really needs to be accomplished soon in Carver County. It's the extension of Highway 212. If you went west from here, you would go through multiple cities, but you would eventually get to the crosstown, which turns into Highway 212. Highway 212 then goes west all the way through Carver County and goes all the way out to Granite Falls. I have a son recently that has started to go to school in Brookings, South Dakota. And I'm telling you, I have driven Highway 212 and then Highway 23 and 14 more times than you can imagine. And it's a frightening drive. And one of the reasons why it's a frightening drive is because the road expands in Carver County, at least, from four lanes to two lanes and then back to four lanes. And that is presenting a pretty significant safety risk. It's difficult for drivers, for the huge amount of truck traffic on that highway. It's very difficult to go from four lanes to two lanes and then back to four lanes in what is a metropolitan area. We funded the first 10 miles of highway, which was 212, back in 2003, and worked quite a bit to get that construction done. We'd started the planning for Highway 212 back in 1912. This is a project that is long overdue. We're very grateful for the improvements to Highway 212. It has improved the quality of life and the economy along that area. But this section with those two lanes needs improvement. It's become vital for safety and for traffic management. I have with me a couple of folks that would like to testify briefly about the merits of this project and can also testify about the technical requirements for the project. They are the county's project public works manager, Lyndon Robjan, and then we also have the assistant Chaska administrator who is here with me, and also Bob Lindahl. He is a former city council member who has worked on this project tirelessly as long as I have known him. So we are all here to advocate for Highway 212 funding. Madam Chair, I'll then introduce Mr. Robjan, who is the public works manager at Carver County.
Welcome back, Mr. Robjan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I think we gave you a packet of information. You have those in front of you. Just a little bit of background. We talked about this a couple months ago, but you remember that Highway 212 is one of the interregional corridors in the state, and it is a high-priority interregional corridor in the metro area and in Carver County. And I think the new term for roads like this is that's come along is a corridor of commerce that connect regional trade centers. And I'd have to say this is a pretty important one. One thing to note in your handout is this is the only two-lane high-priority interregional corridor in the state, and it happens to be in the metropolitan area. So we're not looking for an upgrade to a freeway standard. We're just looking for an upgrade from a basic two-lane deficient rural county highway, state highway with narrow shoulders, to something that meets modern design standards. And it just happens to be in the metro area, so it's pretty unusual. The coalition has been active since 1957 studying this corridor. There was a study done in the 70s that showed that this was a very important route and that it should be programmed in the 1980s for construction. Obviously, that didn't happen. Here we are today still working on it. We've done a lot of work. We've got a lot of help from our federal legislators to study the corridor and keep moving with it. As you can tell from some of the pictures in your handout, it is a critical freight route for the state, and there are some severe safety issues from what Senator Altman mentioned, going from a four-lane highway to a two-lane highway, back to a four-lane highway, back to a two-lane highway. You can imagine the speeds change constantly. There is a tremendous amount of freight traffic on the roadway. 15% of the traffic on 212 in Carver County is heavy commercial. To put that in perspective, that's double. That's almost double the state average, which is around 8%. We have a projected traffic of 34,000. There's 12,000 cars on the road or vehicles on the highway today. And frankly, the section limits economic growth and compromises safety. So our request to you today is to, we know that this is a huge undertaking to upgrade this roadway. We've been working very closely with MnDOT, and the county's actually taken the lead on studying the highway for the next phase. And we actually have an RFP out now for a consultant to study, to keep moving with the preliminary engineering for the phases that we haven't completed. But we have a vision plan, a map in front of you that shows what we've been doing. We've been working on this for many years. And we really want to concentrate on Part B, which is the piece of highway between Chaska and Cologne, as well as an interchange in the city of Chaska, County Road 140. Again, we have a big plan to upgrade this highway in the future, but we understand with funding limitations that we have to do it in smaller pieces. So what we try to do is come up with a phased approach to the project. And again, we're talking about, at least today, the part that has the most momentum, and that's the piece that we call Part B, from Chaska to Cologne. We already have the preliminary design is done. The environmental document is finished, and actually the Federal Highway Administration has approved the EA for this corridor. So there's actually a FONSI in place, which is pretty good, because I don't know if you know, but the rules have changed on getting a FONSI from FHWA. You have to have actually construction dollars programmed now in order for them to approve the document. We were one of the last projects to get approved. The county's adopted an official map, so we've defined the right-of-way for the corridor, and by ordinance, the county board adopted official map for the corridor. So there's a lot of momentum that we want to keep going. Again, what we try to do, though, now is split that part, the 5-mile section, into manageable phases. And the $20 million that we're asking for you today, from you today, is for the first 2 miles from Chaska towards Cologne. And we've identified that we can upgrade that section, acquire the right-of-way, and do construction for that amount up between County Road 11 and County Road 43. At the same time, the city has been working very hard with their comprehensive planning at County Road 140. And Jeffrey Dahl, the Assistant City Administrator, will give you a little bit of information on that project. But we are asking for funding for an interchange there. Right now it's a partial interchange. The Met Council approved us to put in a full access interchange there to help with the economic development of that area. So with that, I won't spend a lot more time on our request. If Jeffrey wants to highlight the interchange a little more, sure, in the city of Chaska, if that's okay, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. Just to talk a little bit about the Chaska interchange. My role in the city is the Economic Development Director. So I don't know too much about the construction component. What I can tell you is that it's an $8 million request. This is for a half access, half access at County Road 140. We've done the legwork. There is warrants for it. We're utilizing the existing overpass that's already there. And more importantly, from at least Chaska's perspective, is that the economic development it would bring to the city, to Carver County, to the Southwest Metro, to the whole region would be real critical. We just underwent a master plan process, which was a year-long process, that we rezoned and reclassified land use in this 2-plus-square-mile area for business park and corporate users. We've been successful just about a mile to the north on 212 of attracting national corporations, over $100 million of investment in economic activity. And that what they asked for is the direct access. And so we're very hopeful that with this interchange, we're going to see a lot more activity. We've been a great partner. We've had great partners with Deed, with the county, with Greater MSP, in working together to try to attract these companies, and we have been successful, and we hope that'll continue with this interchange. So, thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, members. Any questions, Senator Orban? Oh, yes, Senator Sindrum.
You know, just kind of again, as I have occasion to drive out in that area, It's growing almost prolifically. The road systems have a lot of stress. I notice here projections from 12,000 vehicles to 34,000 vehicles. Again, I think this is another one we need to pay attention to.
Thank you, Senator Sindrum. Senator Orban, do you have any additional comments?
Madam Chair, Senator Sindrum, thank you. I know that because there aren't any questions, it means you all support it. And you will be putting it in the bill as a very high priority. But I would say that this section of Highway 212 is still a cartway. It's two lanes. It's a very dangerous place to be if you're driving during the day, during a storm, at night. It's a scary place, and right in the center of our metropolitan area, in our seven-county metro area, and it is going to be a terrible safety hazard if we don't look at this project and fund it as soon as we can. So I would appreciate your prioritizing it. I can see that Senator Peterson loves it, and he's smiling, and all those members that aren't here I can count on as yes. Members, I really appreciate your hearing this bill today, and I would appreciate your support.
Thank you, Senator. And with that, the chair lays over Senate File 866 for possible inclusion in a future bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, Senator Schmidt. And you have Senate Files 178 and 577, so whichever is your pleasure.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. It's good to be here with you today. If we could take up Senate File 178 first, I'd appreciate that.
Senate File 178.
Right, Madam Chair and members of the committee, Senate File 178 calls for an allocation of state general obligation bonds to recapitalize the Port Development Assistance Program. This program was approved by the legislature in the early 1990s and has received financial support in most of the bonding bills that have been enacted since 1996. The object of the program is to maintain or improve port infrastructure to allow our public ports to accommodate the movement of commodities into and out of the state. Seems straightforward enough. Moving commodities by water is an efficient, environmentally friendly, low-cost option for many sectors of our economy. Our agriculture sector relies on the Upper Mississippi Waterway and the Great Lakes Seaway to move corn, soybeans, and wheat to national and international markets. Sand, gravel, cement, and road salt move into the state through our port facilities as well. Western coal is shipped both on the river and the Great Lakes, and the movement of taconite from our northern Minnesota mines to steel mills down the Great Lakes are also important sectors which rely upon the port infrastructure to keep our economy moving forward. The Port Development Assistance Program provides state matching funds for the ports who, on their own, could not afford to make these infrastructure improvements. Most of the economic activity and jobs that rely upon our port infrastructure are not located in the communities which host port facilities, but there are thousands of Minnesota jobs that are secured because of our ability to transport products by water. This program pays for the nuts and bolts infrastructure which keeps our economy moving. I have with me Ms. Lori Lauder from the St. Paul Port Authority, who will tell you more about the Port Development Assistance Program. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Welcome, Ms. Lauder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Lori Lauder. I'm the Director of Business and Intergovernmental Affairs at the St. Paul Port Authority. I have a few quick comments. The Port Development Assistance Program allows our public ports to maintain critical infrastructure so that we can continue to facilitate the movement of products in and out of the state of Minnesota through the Great Lakes and the Upper Mississippi Waterway System. So I wanted to provide you a couple points of production, if I might. In 2012, our river ports and the Port of Duluth brought in over 10 million tons of freight. Our outbound tonnage in 2012 was over 60 million tons. We bring in sand and gravel, fertilizer, cement, and slag. We export taconite, grain, coal, scrap iron, and potash. Duluth moves a significant number of wind turbines, in addition, through the Port of Duluth from European manufacturers to wind farms in the Dakotas and Canada. Our ports, Madam Chair, are hubs of activities. There are jobs at our ports. There are thousands of jobs across the state that gain a certain competitive advantage by virtue of our ability to move commodities to national and international markets through our waterway system. The efficient transshipment of cargo, as you can imagine, through Minnesota ports benefits many sectors of our state economy, and the ports program has been the means by which we have maintained our important and critically important port infrastructure. A couple of examples. Red Wing a few years ago relocated their cargo handling facilities with funding from this program. They were able to move their bulkhead for loading and unloading barges from the north to the south end of town. This placed the resurfaced dock and cargo storage area very near the plant, which generates an amount of truck traffic to and from the ports across the river. They eliminated thousands of truck trips through the heart of Red Wing as a result of this project. The Port of Duluth has rehabilitated warehouse roofs, repaired several areas of their dock walls, and addressed transportation access by rehabbing railroad tracks and road access to port facilities. Winona, Madam Chair, has removed a sunken barge which was disrupting the movement of traffic to and from their commercial dock. They have replaced barge mooring facilities and constructed a new mooring cell and rehabilitated their existing commercial dock wall. Winona also received development funds, this program funds, for a dredging project which became part of a multimodal transportation improvement project for their community. And lastly, we here in St. Paul at our Port Authority have rehabbed warehouse roofs, repaired several areas of dock walls, and upgraded barge mooring site. And most recently, we've just completed a new dock wall. It's a section of our harbor that never had a dock wall before. And I'm very pleased to say that our first tenant along that dock wall, other than we've been licensing some shipping users, some small boat users over the past year or two, but our first tenant that's going to construct on land at this site, and there are other adjacent areas available, is a Stuartville company, Madam Chair, called Forma Feed. Forma Feed started to do their site grading last fall until the winter set in, and if we ever get spring, whenever that is, they will be constructing at least a new 60,000 square foot facility on 5 acres of land, and this is a $5 million facility on previous fallow land, so the tax throw off and the jobs will be terrific. Wanted to mention in general that multiple users will be along this dock wall. We have multiple activities, as you've heard me talk about. And in summary, Madam Chair, another aspect, of course, is with the Asian carp threatening our northern waters and our urban waters. If the St. Anthony Lock and Dam closes, which is likely, then we will have some pressure from the Minneapolis businesses that will be displaced. We'll have some pressure to accommodate them in the St. Paul Harbor. So this means that it's really important that we achieve some of this funding in the aggregate to put in some new infrastructure to accommodate them. In summary, the benefits of our public ports, Madam Chair, have been described by a former member of the Ports Association, retired Duluth Port Authority Director Davis Helberg, who said waterborne commerce uses less energy, causes less environmental degradation, generates less waste disposal, and is responsible for the least societal disruption and is almost always cheaper. And I think I've probably run out of time, and that's the end anyway. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Louder.
You're welcome.
And I just want to say everybody's doing great on time, and I thank everyone for that. We have additional testimony from Mr. Tom Diamond, I believe. If
thank
you please
you.
Introduce yourself for the record.
Sure. Tom Diamond. Speak on this program. Many of Minnesotans and elected officials are concerned about reducing waste, fraud, and abuse. This Port Development Fund could be the poster child for that category. The problems that with the Port Development Fund is that it's broken, it should be discontinued because of inadequate oversight and wasteful spending. The legislature should approve specific port projects because the public should be able to participate and the legislators in the decision-making process. A review of the MnDOT Port Development Fund shows a program that's spending millions of dollars in violation of state law. State statutes and rules are not being followed. MnDOT approved $2.4 million to move a barge servicing facility. After the state money was spent on the project, the move was abandoned. The state rules require MnDOT to provide public notice and schedules for when this money is being distributed. The MnDOT has distributed millions of dollars of public funds without providing required public notice. Required project ranking was not done on projects. MnDOT did not do the required determination of grant eligibility on projects. They have not done the required cost-benefit analysis on projects. And they have not required project revenue information, which is a requirement to determine eligibility of the program. This is a short list of what has not been done on this program. If you take a look at the MnDOT plan for transportation, you'll see that their numbers are significantly less. As a matter of $4 million for port projects that they project over 4 years, rather than this $10 million proposals in here. If you were to take a look at the projects that are suggested in here, one of them I'll just point out is for St. Paul, is a $2 million project, which we just completed a public study, $2 million study project of this area. And the project that's listed in there supposedly to be done was never even discussed or is not any part of a plan. It's just a made-up project. That's the problem with this process is we are not having public review of millions of dollars of money. And at the same time, there is great need for investment in public infrastructure that goes without funding while it's going into a fund like this, which is literally a big slush fund with very little oversight, very little review of funding. And just to follow up on one of the points, is it was pointed out that this is the most fuel-efficient and cost-effective transportation. As a matter of fact, if you take a look at the studies that have been done by EPA, Department of Energy and stuff, it is a greater pollutant, uses more fuel, is less efficient than the rail services since the Federal Staggers Rail Act and the revitalization of the railroads. And I know we don't have time to get into it, but what I'm saying is there's a lot of information that you are not being provided with, or you're being provided incorrect information, and this funding for the state is much too important for our infrastructure not to go to the projects where it really needs to go to. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Diamond. Members, are there any questions or comments for any of the testifiers? Senator Schmidt, do you have any concluding remarks?
You know, I think we've made our case here. I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
And with that, the Chair lays over Senate File 178 for possible inclusion in a future bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No, Madam Chair, we also have Senate File 577. Is that
yes,
all right to hear
absolutely.
This right now?
Yes.
All right,
that's
great.
That's the plan.
And I'd ask my folks up here to testify on behalf of this to join me right now just in the interest of time. Senate File 577 actually is an appropriation from the bonding bill, $2.6 million for pre-design, final design, and construction of a Red Wing West fire station and training facility. The city has already purchased 2.6 acres of land for the project, and it'll be matching any funding we get with $2.26 million in local funds, and hoping to be LEED certified in this project. We'll have some great testimony here in a moment, but I'd just like to emphasize Red Wing is a pretty town down in southeastern Minnesota along the river in Bluff Country. Because of the river and the bluffs, it's really spread out over a geography, and it takes a while to get from one end of town to the other. We only have one fire station right now, and that's in downtown Red Wing. As you move towards the Twin Cities metro area west of town, you're moving towards the nuclear power plant and also the Treasure Island Casino. So there's a lot of activity on that side of town, or just outside of town. But yet the call time to get from our downtown fire station out to those facilities is quite large. So there is a need for this sort of investment. And with that said, I'd just like to turn it over for some more detail on what we're proposing.
Thank you, Senator.
Hello, my name is Marshall Hallock. I'm with City Administration. I'd like to thank the Madam Chair and the committee for hearing Senate File 577. While my senator stole a bunch of my thunder, I'll try not to repeat too much of what he said, but that's all
we
right.
We do that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. That's all right. The city of Red Wing needs the state's assistance and help in building this additional fire station and fire training facility for three primary reasons. The first and foremost, as the senator mentioned, is public safety. Simply stated, the current fire station is too far away from major commercial areas, higher risk areas, and areas of growth within the city. Second, because the facility would spur economic development, and finally, it could decrease the cost of our public safety departments and those of adjoining or communities just adjacent to us. To understand the need for the fire station, you have to understand a part of Red Wing's geography. And as Senator Schmidt mentioned, Red Wing is essentially long and narrow, but the current fire station resides on the far, I think this is east side of town, and development in some of those higher risk facilities such as the nuclear power facility, the casino, and others are on the far west side of town. And right now, for example, it takes, and our fire chief will discuss this too, but it takes us approximately 20 minutes to run our ladder truck from, or some of our fire apparatus, ambulances, and those type of that type of equipment from the current location to a facility such as the Prairie Island Nuclear Generating Plant, to the casino and areas of that nature. Building this facility would cut the fire and EMS response time to those facilities I just mentioned by approximately 50%. And this new facility too would also make our current industrial development and our business parks more attractive. One of the factors that a lot of those folks look at is how what the public safety response time is in determining where they are going to site their projects. The city's committed to this facility and has already purchased the 2.6 acres of land necessary to site the facility, and the city will also be providing a $2.6 million match for the $2.6 million requested. We're also having discussions with our local technical college about how we might work together on the training facility component of this project. But to give maybe a little more legs to this project, we have Fire Chief Tom Snyder with us, and I'd like to turn it over to him at this time. But thank you.
Thank you, and welcome, Chief Snyder.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Tom Snyder. I'm the fire chief for the City of Red Wing. This project isn't just the City of Red Wing's wish list or my personal pipe dream. It's based on a study that was released in 2008. Emergency Services Consulting did a study for the City of Red Wing and determined at that point that this station was needed at that point in time. And so we began to take the steps to get there. As Marshall said, it will serve our western region of our response area, which includes residential, commercial, industrial, but also some critical infrastructure, Lock and Dam 3, the Prairie Island Nuclear Generating Plant, as well as the Treasure Island Resort and Casino, a high population area. On any given day, we've got thousands of people in that facility that are transient occupants of our response area. The role of the fire service has changed, evolving over the years. Fire calls, specifically fire structure fires, are reduced throughout the nation, actually, thanks to code enforcement and technology and training. However, demands for services are increasing. Special rescue, hazardous waste responses, and emergency medicine is a large portion of that change. In Red Wing, we're a fire-based, advanced life support ambulance service. So in addition to all of the services you might expect from your local fire department, we literally are the ambulance service. Ambulance services today bring the emergency room to your doorstep. And in those instances, response time is critical. In the setting of a heart attack, a stroke, respiratory distress, those types of things, seconds count. It's not minutes, it's seconds. Time is tissue is kind of one of the phrases that we use in the business. Likewise, response time is critical from a fire response standpoint. Fires grow exponentially. The longer they burn, the quicker they grow. And so response time is critical there as well. One component we've touched on in this is the presence of that training facility. Having these facilities close at hand would allow us to keep our resources, our personnel in the area. We would make this available to our regional fire and EMS partners for their training. And additionally, it's intended to serve a multi-discipline process. So it would be it's intended to serve law enforcement, EMS, fire, and any other capacity that we can serve out of that facility. This type of training is critical to our mission. These are high-risk, low-occurrence events, so we need to be prepared and we need to be proficient when we have that, when the need arises, but we don't have the opportunity to practice it very often. So we need to train and train in realistic circumstances that we currently can't achieve. That being said, I believe that's all I have.
Thank you, Chief. And Senator Schmidt had to step away to make a quick vote in another committee. So in his absence, if members have any questions or comments for the very qualified gentleman here, I'm sure they'll be glad to help answer. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The way it sounded to me, the $2.6 million portion from the city, was that the land acquisition? Did I hear that correctly? Or
Madam Chair, Senator, we've acquired a parcel of property, but that is not, I think that parcel costs us in the neighborhood of $357,000 as a result of a very significant gift from the folks that own the land, because they recognize the need to site that facility in this particular spot. So the other, there's approximately $2.3 to $2.4 million that the city is also going to contribute towards that project.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have that funding designated right now, or how are you raising that?
Right. We've got, Madam Chair, excuse me, Senator. We have currently, the city employs about a 10-year CIP, and it's currently scheduled within the CIP for the city portion.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Any additional comments or questions? Senator Senjum.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm reminded, Senator Keith Langset, and I'm not sure what year, doesn't matter a whole lot, maybe 5-6 years ago, we funded a fire station in Blue Earth, and I think if he were here to say, he would probably say that that was one of the biggest mistakes he ever made in terms of not necessarily the station, but the fact that it opens the bonding process up to 833 other cities that probably all, to a great extent, have fire stations and all have needs. And so we need to think about that one as we think about this.
Thank you, Senator.
Madam Chair, if I may?
Yes.
I appreciate Senator Senjum's perspective. Appreciate Senator Keith Langseth's perspective. This is a bit unique, and for several different reasons. I'd just like to inform the committee of several other reasons. One of the primary reasons is some of the risks that are involved here and some of the need, quite frankly, for the facility are the result of facilities that currently don't pay property taxes and wouldn't contribute directly financially towards this project, even though they contribute mightily to the state's economic development, the state's resources, and, frankly, the regional resources, too. Another significant factor is when we take a look at what's referred to as our primary service area, for example, of our ambulance facility, it far exceeds it encompasses more than simply the city. It's a much broader area. And again, from those areas, we're receiving no financial assistance in helping us construct this needed facility. So there's reasons for constructing it that are bore by these risk factors. But some of these risk factors are contributing contributing a little, not significantly, towards the project cost. And that's why we feel this one is particularly unique. And I can understand the senator's point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, can I just follow up?
Senator Senjum.
I'm going to assume the at least one of those facilities is the nuclear power plant. Have they, along the way, and I'm talking about the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, as you, and perhaps you don't know, have they made any recommendations about the lack of a fire station within a critical distance from that site in any of their inspections that you might know of?
Yep. Madam Chair, yes. I actually see quite a few of their different documentations we have. Annual meetings, at least with the NRC. They have never cited specifically a fire station, but what they do continually go back to is not so much the location, but the interesting notion that, or the interesting fact rather, that Red Wing is the first responder to that facility. And in, God forbid, any type of significant event out there, Red Wing has significant demands placed upon it. And one of the primary reasons that this facility has been cited through the study process in this area is to mitigate that tremendous amount of response time, cutting it from 20 minutes to 10 minutes or less, because as our fire chief said, it's not just tissues here, but it is often the case, time on the site to start mitigating any type of environmental consequences that could occur in the absence of that public safety service could be, have tremendous impacts on the state. again, the NRC never specifically mentions where our current fire station is located, but it does constantly remind us and enforce the notion that we have tremendous obligations because we are a first responder to that Prairie Island nuclear generating facility.
Good. Thank you very much. That's informative.
Thank you. Thank you, testifiers. And if there are no other questions or comments, the chair lays over Senate File 577 for possible inclusion in a future bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. And next, Senator Champion will present Senate File 315. Senator Zietzik had to go to the same committee for a vote. Thank you, Senator Champion.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. Good afternoon. Senate File 315 is a bonding request for $11.7 million to rehab the Franklin Avenue Bridge over the Mississippi River. This great structure was completed in 1923. Just so that we give you some background, the average daily traffic for the bridge is around 9,500 vehicles per day. There's also a lot of bike and pedestrian traffic since this bridge is near the University of Minnesota and Augsburg College. With me today is former Senator, now Hennepin County Commissioner Linda Higgins, and Hennepin County Transportation Director and County Engineer Jim Grubb.
Thank you.
To discuss the project and answer any questions. And with that, I would like to have my wonderful Commissioner go forward.
Welcome back, Commissioner Higgins.
Thank you very much. And members, I believe there's a fact sheet from Hennepin County in your packets. The Franklin Avenue Bridge is a concrete arch bridge that spans the Mississippi River. The bridge is listed on the National Register of Historic Places and is a landmark as identified in 1985 by the Minneapolis Heritage Preservation Commission. The Franklin Avenue Bridge is commonly considered to be a twin of the Ford Bridge, a similar concrete arch bridge over the Mississippi constructed in 1927. The common ages of the Franklin and Ford bridges mean that they share a common repair and reconditioning schedule. Both bridges had their original bridge decks, replaced in the 1970s, and the Franklin Avenue Bridge, the bridge we're talking to you about today, its deck was last replaced in 1970 itself. In 2002, we replaced the Ford Bridge deck, and now it's time to do the Franklin Avenue Bridge deck. Hennepin County proposes to replace the bridge deck in 2014 and seeks $11.75 million in financial assistance from the state. The total cost for this work is $23.5 million. And we have Jim Grubb with us. He's our county engineer extraordinaire. And if you have any technical questions, I'm sure he's the one who's going to answer them.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Grubb?
Good afternoon, members. My name is Jim Grubb, as mentioned, the Hennepin County engineer. As we look at the Franklin Avenue Bridge, you know, it's a majestic concrete arch structure. Although we're seeking funding for the reconditioning, which must take place next year, 2014, it will take place. It is not in imminent danger of collapsing at this point. The proposal is merely to take the deck or the top off and replace it. Some of us may remember in the late 90s, the Mendota Bridge had the deck taken off in its entirety, taken down to the arches and rebuilt. The Mendota, the Ford, the Franklin. Those three bridges are actually related to one another through Norwegian engineers that came over in the early 1900s, and they all bear that same age. The Franklin, it's now time for its reconditioning. A very expensive undertaking. When this is done, it will last surely for another 50 years, the majestic structure that it is, just like the Mendota, just like the Ford.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would any of the testifiers be able to answer? Is it eligible for any other historical type funding at all, through other grants and that type of thing. Have you explored all those options?
Madam Chair and Senators, thank you for that question. We have, in fact, received $8.3 million in federal funds to help write down that cost. Just as we did with the Ford Bridge, we received federal funds. And we had a funding gap back in 2002 at that time. We were able to fill that funding gap with a federal legislation through, if you will, an earmark at that time. We no longer have that opportunity. We have the 8.3, however, that we have found.
So, Madam Chair and Mr. Grube, is it safe to say if we just do the math on that, the county's picking up the rest of that 11.7 to get to, if you get 11.75 from the state, you have eight to nine from the federal government, and the county's picking up the rest. Is that accurate?
Madam Chair and Senators, thank you. Hennepin County would be picking up in round figures for the construction $3.5 million. Hennepin County is also going to invest $4.5 million for the engineering. It's currently under design right now, and for the construction inspection. Sum total, Hennepin County's version or amount would be $8 million on the project. What you see is 23.5 for construction plus an additional 4.5 for the engineering that Hennepin is paying for.
Thank you.
Any additional questions or comments? Then with that, the chair. Yes,
just a note on a different year, another year. Our bonding committee has looked at this too along the way, and whether a year or not makes, I don't know, but makes a difference. But I think its time is right, and our project list is certainly swelling up, so to speak. But this is again an asset you either take care of or watch it crumble, and I think that you have to take care of it.
Thank you, Senator. I think the same can be said for a lot of projects around our state. Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
With that, the chair lays over Senate File 315 for possible inclusion in a future bill. And next, we will have Senator Benson, who will introduce Senate File 1356. Thank you for your patience and willingness to join us this afternoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for accommodating the hearing of Senate File 1356. Could I have someone move the bill?
Excuse me?
Is someone going to move the bill? Or
everything's going to be laid over, so just go ahead and present. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 1356 focuses on the Highway 10 corridor going through Anoka County. The significant provisions, the first provision is a major intersection upgrade, and this committee has heard testimony previously on the Highway 10 Armstrong Boulevard project. The other significant provisions are intersection upgrades at the Highway 10 corridor. There have been 6 deaths in this corridor in the last 12 months, and so there's a significant safety issue for the committee to consider. And then the final provision is a third lane in each direction on a section of highway that, if you listen to traffic in the morning, you will hear quite regularly. It passes through a number of Senate districts. Senator Peterson, Hoffman, Johnson, and myself are all impacted by the traffic that flows through this district. And with that, I'd like to turn testimony over to Mr. Doug Fisher from Anoka County.
Welcome, Mr. Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Again, my name is Doug Fisher. I'm the Anoka County Engineer, and on behalf of the Anoka County Board of Commissioners, I'd like to support this Senate file. As was noted, the bill does talk quite a bit about 4 real major areas on Highway 10 in the cities of Coon Rapids, Anoka, and Ramsey that are in need of improvement. Right now, the area that we're focusing on is a expressway, which means it looks like a freeway with the exception of there's at-grade signals controlling major intersections instead of grade-separated interchange. When you look at the various divisions of this bill, the first $17 million would be contribution towards a $35 million interchange at Armstrong Boulevard. The 2 intersections at Ramsey and Sunfish Lake Boulevard would total $150 million. And then the two at-grade intersections in the city of Anoka would be another $115 million. And then the additional $30 million for the Adelaine portion on the piece that actually is a freeway section in the city of Coon Rapids. So this is in total a $330 million set of projects. And again, the key point of this bill and really our first priority is the $17 million towards the Armstrong Boulevard interchange. That is the one project that probably has progressed the farthest and it can be delivered the quickest given the work that we've done on that. And I know, as was mentioned, this committee has heard, and I did include another handout in the packet, so I'm going to dispense with that. But really, we're talking about safety, not only the crashes caused by the railroad tracks being very close to the proximity of the intersection, the at-grade intersections, the congestion, the frustration, the impatience caused by the motorists out there, but also the public safety aspects of it. And then, you know, this is a very rapidly fast-growing corridor in Anoka County and in the northwest suburbs, all the way really from the Twin Cities to St. Cloud. And I'm sure, as was mentioned before, if you go up north on any summer weekend, on a Friday night or a Sunday night coming back, you're very familiar with the frustrations that this corridor will have. So, again, I'd be glad to answer any technical questions you have. And, again, I provided a little handout for your use, but I'll dispense with going through that.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Senator? And,
Madam Chair, I also have Jason Tosse, who would like to submit testimony as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jason Tosse, council member from the city of Ramsey. I'd like to thank the senator for pitching today, and I am doing the same for Mayor Stroman, who had to leave. As you remember, we were here 2 months ago. I think the weather was about the same as it is now to discuss this particular project. And since that time, I've also received support from Anoka County Sheriff James Stewart, who we can provide that letter for you. But basically, I'm going to just touch on those same things that Sheriff Stewart touched on, because it's like I mentioned before, my normal 9-to-5 job, if you will, although I don't work at it as much anymore, is a police officer. And I do believe that this has always been a public safety issue. The BNSF rail line does cut off 90% of Ramsey from Highway 10. And as you may know, the number of accidents, and as I said before, accidents happen. They just do. But when our first responders cannot get to those accidents, and as we showed that video previously, that's very dramatic. And unfortunately, that just happens all too often. And, you know, we just really are really hoping that the city of Ramsey, the only city along that Highway 10 corridor, that our first responders would have that access to get to those accidents south of that rail line. And including that is that Mercy Hospital is south of that rail line as well. So it is imperative, obviously, for the city of Ramsey to have a guaranteed access. And with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Tosse. Members, any questions or comments? Senator Benson, any concluding remarks?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you. The chair lays over Senate File 1356 for possible inclusion in a future bill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And then looking ahead to Wednesday, we will be taking up the omnibus bill. If there are any substantive changes, the chair will be sending out an updated spreadsheet tomorrow. And with that, then, the meeting.
Madam Chair,
yes, Senator St. John.
Just procedurally, I don't have any, but we're members to have amendments. Would we open that bill up again?
Yes, okay. We would.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, the meeting is adjourned.